The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and we're very proud to have him, is Senator Michael Gianaris, a Democrat from New York's 12th District and Deputy Majority Leader in the State Senate. Welcome, Senator Gianaris.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. I've always been a fan. Let's start by asking you, how are you getting along with the governor? I say that because sometimes I think he picks on you guys. He thinks it's the old Republican Senate. He wants to.
One would think, but I don't spend a lot of time thinking about how I get along with him or anybody else. I think a lot about the people I represent, the transformational change we're bringing to this state, which is what they wanted, as evidenced by the election results last year. And if people like me for it, that's great. And if people dislike me for it, well, that's too bad. But as long as I'm discharging my responsibilities to the people of the state, I don't really care much about who likes me, who doesn't like me.
Well, that's really good. So let me ask you this. Are you, do you ever get involved in, discussions with the governor about some of the things he says? Because, I get the feeling sometimes he really would rather have the old Republicans back, and he may, because he's attacking the Democrats, I'm trying to get you here, because he's attacking the Democrats, you got one more time before you're going to have to, change the gerrymander in New York State in your favor as opposed to the old Republicans. He could do powerful damage to you, couldn't he?
Honestly, there's no one more powerful than the people of the state, and they want a Democratic Senate. I'll give you some statistics to give you a sense of how daunting it is for the Republicans to stage a comeback. Prior to 2018, the largest flip of seats in the history of the Senate was 4. And by the way, that was us in 2012. We achieved that. We should have had the majority then. The IDC was around. Everybody knows that history at this point.
No, everybody doesn't. But let's just remind everybody that the IDC were a bunch of so-called Democrats who made common cause with the Republicans for whatever they got out of it. And many of them were defeated at the polls last time, right?
That's right. And that was part of the amazing election results of 2018. That the IDC was wiped out, allowing the Democrats to be unified, and then we went and won a whole bunch of seats in November. And so that was the second part of my point. So we had won those 4 seats. That was a historic flip in 2012. In 2018, we flipped 8 Republican seats in November, so twice as much as ever had been flipped from one party to another before. Our majority now is the largest Democratic majority in over 100 years. And so this notion of the possibility of us losing what would have to be, another 8 seats back in the other direction is pretty far-fetched, especially when someone as unpopular in this state as Donald Trump is at the top of the ticket. And we are delivering historic new laws in this state that have made this the most productive legislative session in the history of New York State. I think we'll be rewarded by the voters with a continuing majority.
Well, but there are, you have a number of what I would call vulnerable seats. These are people who sit on Long Island, Westchester, upstate. They're not quite as progressive in their orientation as, let's say, some people from New York City. Isn't that right?
Well, it's by definition, when your group is that large, it's going to be very diverse. And so, yes, we have people from all parts of the state. We have people from all sorts of different views within the Democratic Party tent. And we have managed to keep that group unified and moving forward on a host of important proposals. For example, we passed a permanent property tax cap in this state, which is something the Republicans talked about for a decade and couldn't get done. We got it done and provided tax relief for the people of Long Island and parts north of New York City. But we also protected women's rights. We protected child victims. We protected members of the LGBT community. We enacted responsible gun laws, criminal justice reforms. We're about to enact the most significant tenant protections in this state since rent regulation was established 4 decades ago.
Well, let's stop right there. Let's stop right there and go into that. Why don't you tell everybody, because there's still people who don't get the fine print and all of that, what exactly is going to happen with those rent laws?
We're expected to pass them on Friday. The bill was introduced on Tuesday. It's the normal 3-day aging process, but it was the result of a lot of work between the Senate and the Assembly. We have rent regulation in this state that applies currently just to New York City, Nassau County, Westchester, Rockland. And in those counties, there are certain apartments that whose rent is regulated. They can only go up a certain amount every year to try and preserve affordability, because we have an incredible housing affordability crisis in that part of the state. And we have two ways we look at trying to solve that. One is preserving affordable housing stock that currently exists, and the other is building additional affordable housing. What we're going to do on Friday is a huge step in the right direction on the first of those priorities, which is preserving affordable housing stock. We have lost hundreds of thousands of units out of regulation in the last couple of decades because the Republican Senate would allow loopholes to be opened up every time the rent laws were up for renewal. And those loopholes allowed more and more apartments to fall out of regulation and get more and more people displaced, make it harder for them to stay in their neighborhoods. And it's directly correlated to an increase in homelessness that we've been experiencing. So what we're about to do is strengthen those protections, close those loopholes, make it easier for tenants to stay in their apartments and their homes. And it's a banner achievement for us.
The landlords, of course, are saying, oh, no, see, what's going to happen here is because we're going to get so punished and so hammered, we can't take care of those apartments and people will be unhappy. Are they right?
Well, I'm not crying for the real estate barons of New York City. They are among the most successful people on earth. And I don't begrudge them that. But I think the scales have been tipped in their favor for quite some time, and it's time for working people and people of lesser means to get the attention from government that they've been lacking all these years.
Well, now the Times and other people are reporting that they've given tremendous amounts of money to people like the governor and others. I think there's some indication they think they've been screwed. Money gets results, and here they're not getting those results. What do you think this means?
Well, I think it means there's a new era in state government, and one that's been lacking for far too long, where money does not get results. That's not the way democracy is supposed to work. And yes, the real estate community have been prolific in their political giving to both sides of the aisle. And we're usually on the short end of it. But when it comes to election time, they've been very big advocates for the Senate Republicans. And if nothing else, this Democratic majority has shown that we don't respond to campaign contributions the way that that maybe has happened in the past. And so I would just say if the premise was money gets results, well, it's good news that it doesn't anymore.
Senator, let's talk about the New York Assembly, which has voted to give driver's licenses now for immigrants and to undocumented immigrants. Will the Senate do the same thing?
We're going to be discussing it, and I hope we do. I think it's a hot issue. It's a high profile issue. But when we peel back the layers of it, the arguments against it don't really carry a lot of water. This is something that is not only good for the people who might be receiving these licenses, but good for the state as a whole, because you have now, these undocumented folks are driving anyway, but they're driving without a license, without insurance. We don't know that they have had the training and the driver's test that we require of everyone else. If there should be a car crash, we don't know that they're going to have insurance to cover it. And so people who are hurt or incur property damage are not going to get compensated. There's no real reason on the merits to oppose it other than the fact that immigration is a hot button issue right now, and the sentiment is just one of being against any possible concession, if you will, to that community. But you look at states like Utah and Texas, states that are pretty deep red, that have done this, and you wonder why New York is lagging behind.
Well, the Siena poll recently showed that, as you just indicated, people really intuitively just don't want that. The way people feel about undocumented immigrants?
I think it's a reflection of that, and I think it's a lack of education on the issue. What was interesting to me was that the numbers improved notably from the last time the question was tested. So I believe that New Yorkers are starting to understand what it means and starting to appreciate that this would be a good thing, not just for the undocumented population, but for everyone who lives in New York State.
Mike Gianaris, paid surrogacy legislation, can you explain it so we can understand it, and number one, and what's holding it up in the Assembly?
Well, New York was one of the states that does not allow surrogacy, which is the way a lot of people have children, whether they're LGBTQ people or for other reasons. People who are unable to conceive oftentimes will use a surrogate or somebody else to give birth to the child. And New York is a state that does not allow that. Many states do. And we have a lot of New Yorkers who travel outside of the state in order to have children that way. And so we're trying to change that here. We believe it's something that is a benefit to a lot of New Yorkers. It's happening anyway. It's just that we're imposing a massive inconvenience on people to travel to other jurisdictions that allow it in order to do this. And it was yet another of the things that the Senate majority is doing. I hope the Assembly follows suit, but that's up to them.
Opponents, of course, include the Catholic Church and some female advocates in the Assembly who liken the process to womb harvesting, saying it's a dangerous process that exploits the female carrier. What do you think?
Well, it's a strange argument to me when we spend so much time talking about a woman's right to choose what to do with her own body in the case of reproductive rights. But in this case, we don't want to offer that choice and that ability to women to be surrogates. It is a safe practice that has been going on for quite some time in a number of other jurisdictions, and it seems to be happening without incident and to the benefit of thousands and thousands of people. And I respect people who have different viewpoints on it, but I think this would be a good thing for New York.
You have a gun origin registry legislation, personally you have it, on the, quote, iron pipeline and fighting gun trafficking. Can you tell us what that does?
Yeah, we have, as you well know, Alan, we have some of the strongest gun laws in the country here in New York, and much of that accomplished this year with this majority. We've passed a number of improvements, including the red flag bill, which helps get guns out of the hands of people who are known to be a danger. But one problem we continue to have is that states that are much more lax than New York are allowing people to get guns more easily, and then it's not that difficult to drive them in a car across the state line and get them into New York. And so these are a huge percentage of the guns used in crimes in New York come from other states where it's easier to obtain firearms. What this bill tries to do is pull back the curtain a little bit and put a spotlight on where the guns are coming from that are used in crimes in New York. And the hope is that if we identify a particular state that is a predominant part of the problem, like we often hear anecdotally that Virginia is a place where a lot of guns are transported into New York from, that we can then engage with those states and try and get them to appreciate how big a problem this is for other places. So the bill would have DCJS, which is our criminal justice agency, release on a regular basis a report identifying gun usage and crimes in New York and where the origin of those guns are.
Let me ask you something. There was a bit of a tiff over Amazon and losing Amazon, obviously. the governor set out to blame the state Senate for the loss of that deal. You were one of the people who were involved in taking the con on that. Have you had second thoughts?
No, I have not, Alan. I know you and I disagree on this. I've heard your opinion on it. But look, I represent the community in which this massive development was going to be dropped. And I spent a good year from the moment the bid process was announced by Amazon in 2017 until the deal was announced in at the end of 2018, researching and trying to obtain information about what this would mean for my community. I attempted on numerous occasions to communicate with state officials, and in large part, I believe, because they had signed a secrecy agreement with Amazon, I was unable to get any information. I traveled to Seattle. I spoke to tech executives from San Francisco. I talked to former Amazon executives to understand the effect that they had on the communities in which they're based. And I did not get a good feeling about it. The attention to or the lack of attention to the needs of a community, affordable housing, which is something we just talked about in the context of the rent laws, mass transit systems, schools, parks, et cetera. There was no consideration of any of those things in the deal that was announced. And if you go to Seattle, where the largest Amazon headquarters is, homelessness has gone up 160% in 5 years. The rents in Seattle have gone up three times the national average. There's massive displacement in that city, and it has become, at least the neighborhood in which the headquarters is located, has become essentially Amazonia. And that's not something that Long Island City wants, and that's not something that I wanted for Long Island City. There are people there that are working class people that were already looking for apartments outside of New York because they assumed they would be unable to afford living there, because that is what the presence of an Amazon does in a community. And by the way, not just Amazon, but any giant tech company is having this effect. Microsoft, for example, has just agreed to give $500 million in affordable housing to Seattle because they have realized the effect they're having on these neighborhoods. So if they wanted to come, I'm certainly not against jobs, but if they wanted to come, there should have been real engagement, a real discussion, and a real commitment, a binding commitment of what they were going to do to preserve housing affordability in that neighborhood, what they were going to do to make sure that the subways could handle the extra load, what they were going to do for open space and parks, what they were going to do for the sewage system there, which is already crumbling, what they were going to do for school space. There was none of that. It was only what can they take from us, not what can they give back to the community they wanted to take over. And just to be clear, I was nominated for a position on his board that would review the deal. I never sat on that board for a single day. It was the governor's appointment to make or not make, and he never made it. And so this notion that somehow my nomination that was never actualized scared Jeff Bezos, who is the wealthiest man on earth, is a little bit laughable.
Well, that's impressive. Let me talk to you a little bit about presidential primaries. New Yorkers are always confused as to when the primaries will be, and the legislature always mucks about with it and changes the dates. Why are you doing it again this time?
Well, the dates are set, well, not set, but they are encouraged by the national parties, because these are essentially party contests where delegates get chosen for the party conventions. And the parties have an interest in scaling the dates for different states in a certain way. So everybody knows that Iowa and New Hampshire go first, and then contests proceed thereafter. And they need to be staggered a certain way just to maintain some kind of orderly process. And so the national party encourages, through the awarding of bonus delegates, certain parameters. So, for example, when multiple states in a region pick the same date, there's bonus delegates associated with that. So we are suggesting, and another state party has recommended, April 28th as our date next year, because I believe Pennsylvania and some other states in the region are also going on that day. So we will get extra delegates for doing it that way. They are also awarding extra delegates for states that choose the month of April for their scheduling purposes. And so we picked a date that maximizes our influence over the nominating process by awarding 25% bonus delegates for New York.
Mike Gianaris, let me ask you about cat declawing. You know, we talk about some complicated things here. But cat declawing is something that a lot of people can understand. The legislature has passed a law against doing that. Why?
Well, it's barbaric. By the way, I love the vast diversity of issues I get to talk about on your show. We go from rent to cat.
Well,
everything in between.
But cat is one that they can understand, that everybody can understand and cares about.
That's
rent,
right.
They care about rent too.
Absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely. It's
well, important. We got a bird show here. The guy is death on cats. Because you know, because the cats are killing the birds. And people call. I mean, by the hundreds. So what prompted this?
Well, this has been something that animal rights advocates have been pursuing for a bit. And the important thing to remember is that cat declawing, I think there's a lot of ignorance about what it means. So people think, oh, you're just clipping the nails and, you know, preserving your furniture, because predominantly people who get cats declawed do it. So their sofas are not scratched or their furniture is not damaged. But in reality, there is the procedure involves removing a bone. So it's an amputation, and medically it's referred to as an amputation. So it would be the equivalent for a human of cutting your finger off at the first knuckle. And it is it's a pretty barbaric process that's done just for convenience, to mutilate an animal so that they don't scratch your furniture is not really something that we want to encourage in this state. And so we would be the first state to ban it. A number of localities have done so. A number of countries in other parts of the world have done it. But we would be the first state to do it here. And it's really endemic to the nature of a cat. A cat uses claws to defend itself. It uses claws to stretch. And so it's not a practice that that should be sanctioned, and I'm proud that we passed that here in New York.
Well, quickly, because we're running out of time, helicopter crash. Should we ban executive copters? Should we ban tour copters?
We should heavily regulate them. I think we're still waiting to find out the details of what happened as it relates to that crash, but I happen to represent a community that's a flyover for a lot of helicopters. So people who get on their helicopters in Manhattan usually and are going out to the Hamptons for the weekend fly right over my home, actually, in addition to a lot of Queens neighborhoods on their way. And it just is a tremendous burden in terms of noise pollution that we have to deal with. And so regulating the volume and the hours at which they operate, and making sure they're safe, obviously this incident seemed to only affect the pilot in the copter, but in that sense, we were fortunate that it wasn't a crash that landed on the streets of Manhattan, which could have been a lot more dangerous.
I want to talk to you about another thing here very quickly. Jake Hope, some people refer to it as Jay Joke, you know, it has always been headed by, you know, somebody who was close to the governor. Is it time to have some kind of assurance that somebody from the outside will be running Jacob?
The short answer is yes. But I think you asked the question, let me change your question a little bit. You asked if someone independent should be running Jacob, or maybe we should have a more independent agency policing state government. And so I do think we need a more vigorous watchdog, and we'll continue to have those discussions as we go. It's been an incredibly busy and productive session, but we haven't been able to get to everything. And hopefully we'll do some more in the next week and a lot more than that as we roll into the next year's session.
There's two prominent New Yorkers, Mayor de Blasio running for president and Kirsten Gillibrand. I take it you haven't endorsed either of them yet?
I have not. I've not made a selection in that race at all yet. I've been so occupied with our session and getting the more direct responsibilities I have.
Yeah, but across the breakfast table, across the breakfast table, Mike Gianaris, you must say, what the heck are these guys doing here? You know what I mean?
Well, look, this is a democracy. It's an open field. There's, 24 or 25 people running. And so I don't begrudge anyone the right to go make their case and be a part of the national dialogue. They all have important things to say. And the process will weed itself out. The first debate is coming up just in a couple of weeks. And I think after that, you'll start seeing the field narrow as we get closer to the nominating contest early next year.
We only have a minute, but I wanted to ask you, are you getting enough sleep? You're working real hard. I worry about you.
I haven't gotten enough sleep in years, so I've gotten used to it. But it's every waking hour is a productive one for me, and I get up bright and early as the sun comes up to start preparing for the day, and then once we cross into the business hours after 9 o'clock, the meetings start and our session kicks in. So it's one thing after another. But I've been in public service for a little bit, and I've been waiting for an opportunity like this where we are actually governing and changing the direction of the state for the better. And so I don't have time to sleep, as they say.
Congratulations to you, Mike Gianaris. You really have worked very hard, and I think that you have created a whole new climate in New York State, and I really have been watching you for years and watched what you've done here. You came through the muck and the mire, and you kept your head up high, and now you've won, and I think that's great. So thanks so much for being with us.
I appreciate that very much, Alan. Thank you.
Our guest has been New York State Senator Michael Gianaris, and we are out of time. So again, Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.